Cliff Central.
The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
What is the real economic value of domestic workers and cleaners? So a study was done by the New Economics Foundation, and for the purpose of our conversation, it's worth quoting their spokeswoman, who said, "Pay levels often don't reflect the true value that is being created. As a society, we need a pay structure which rewards those jobs that create most societal benefit rather than those that generate profits at the expense of society and the environment." I think that domestic workers are among the most undervalued participants of our economy, because their value extends beyond what they spend or are able to spend in rands and cents. And I think they're so integral to our productivity that I suspect their actual economic output is at least 10 times higher than what it's actually valued and what it's paid. And so we wanted to bring in an expert today to kind of help us to unpack this a little bit. Tools, don't you want to introduce our guest?
Yes, this is definitely a show we've been looking forward to. So we've got in studio Nikki Gaju, and she's a certified financial planner and tax practitioner. She's also director at Opulentis Wealth Management. She's been doing this for 13 years. And she's really passionate about debunking myths around the definition of wealth. She also has a particular interest in females and especially single mothers. And for her, it's a personal purpose in her life to promote financial literacy amongst women so that they don't ever have to rely on anyone else as a financial plan. So we're really excited to have you here. Thank you for coming.
Hi, ladies. Hi, listeners. Thank you, ladies.
Okay, so Nikki, you feeling good? Can we hit the ground running?
Let's hit the ground running.
Okay, I'm gonna start with the big one, as I often do. How would you articulate the real economic value of domestic workers and cleaners?
Okay, so as you started off saying, the monetary value paid to a cleaner or a domestic truly is not a true reflection of their contribution. I think the best way for me to actually illustrate the value is to use an example very close to my heart.
Okay.
I've got a younger brother who's married, and he's got a little son who turns 2 very soon. So when my nephew was born, my sister-in-law spent a few months at home on maternity leave. And during that time period, they got themselves a childminder who came in. She was trained, got to know the little baby, and off my sister-in-law went off to work. Mm-hmm. Back to the corporate world. So my nephew's nanny is one of the most amazing ladies I have ever met. Mm. By the time my brother and sister-in-law get home by 5:30, after battling hours of traffic to get home, the little boy has been given a bath. He's had his supper given to him. He's ready, waiting for his parents. There's a hot meal on the stove waiting for them. During the time period when the little one was taking his little naps, the house was cleaned, the clothes were washed.
Okay, so she's not just the childminder.
She's not just the childminder. So she has a dual role of both childminder as well as domestic.
Okay.
Clothes were washed, clothes were ironed. The house is spick and span. Mm. They just walk in, rough day, etc., have dinner, play with the baby. Mm. At a certain time, the nanny gets her dinner and off she goes. Mm. She actually lives on the premises. Mm. So for a couple like that, they often say that they actually pay her less than what she's worth.
Mm, because she enables them, right?
She enables them. My sister-in-law, as a female, gets the opportunity to go out into corporate and make a name for herself.
Right.
She gets an opportunity to grow herself from a career and a professional perspective. She also earns an income which contributes to the household income.
Mm.
My brother, on the other hand, a lot of pressure is relieved from him, be it financial, emotional, etc., because he doesn't come home to a situation where, okay, it's Monday night, tonight's my turn to give the baby a bath and feed the baby, etc. All of that's already done. Mm. So how do you actually calculate that value into a daily monetary value? Mm. You just can't. Mm. I mean, let's talk broader. Let's talk about the cleaners.
Mm.
I spent many years at corporate before I exited to start up my own practice. And one of the nicest things to walk into a corporate building is the cleanliness.
Absolutely.
You know, everywhere you look around you, it's clean, it's nice. Yes, you want to be there. It's a great start to the morning. You go up to your office, put down your...
It's part of the sales pitch.
Part of the sales pitch, you know. You put down your laptop bag. The first thing you head for is the coffee area, spick and span, clean. There's milk, there's coffee, sugar, everything that you need.
Mm.
After the coffee break, first stop is the bathroom. And what a pleasure to go into a bathroom that's spick and span, hygienic, etc. After you stop at the bathroom, back to your desk, ready to begin the day.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people don't actually see that value.
And how much more productive it can make you. Because if any of those links were missing, it can completely throw you off.
Correct.
But what I wonder is, isn't it because it's missing? Because you don't feel the weight of having to keep things clean. You don't feel the weight of having to, you know, be in control of both your life at home and your life at work.
That it's taken for granted.
Yeah. That, I mean, they forget the weight of it, so they forget the value as well.
I think you are quite right, and that's sometimes translated by the way some people treat cleaners and the way they look down at them, and the general disrespect, because you're a cleaner, it is your role to clean up after me.
Mm.
You know, I mean, a lot of us were brought up in homes where if you clean, if you mess up, you clean after yourself.
Yeah.
And you find people come to corporate, they behave very poorly, they're in the kitchen area, they spill coffee. Oh no, let's call the cleaner.
Exactly.
She must come through.
They almost
and clean
shadow
up.
Us, right? They're
yes.
an extension of us all, both at home and at work.
Yes.
And I mean, what you touched on when you were describing that experience in a corporate office is twofold, and maybe even more than that. First of all, there's an HR component, right, where it's about the employee experience and how
yes.
do you get the most out of your employees.
Yes.
You put them in a comfortable
correct
environment that's conducive to their productivity, and that's where things like the coffee and the tea come in, as well as, you know, the removal of refuse.
Yes.
You know, because office environments can be quite, I mean, maybe less so nowadays, but are paper intensive.
Yes.
And it's difficult to be productive in that kind of mess. And then there's, you know, the lavatory, the toilet, like you spoke about, right?
Most importantly.
And people undervalue the importance of a clean toilet, you know, because if you're avoiding going to the toilet, say you're anywhere in a public space, at work, even at home, and you're not comfortable using the toilet, that means you spend a lot of time pressed and
yes.
avoiding going. And we all know how being pressed really steals from your productivity and like your general functioning, right? It's almost like being hungry. It's one of those things that is an absolute need. So there's the employee experience, and then there's the marketing experience, right? Where a corporate must market itself to guests, to maybe potential clients, to customers, you know, the commercial space that are external facing, like shops, right? And hygiene and cleanliness is such an important part of marketing. So those are two components of commerce already, HR and marketing, that these women are essentially a part of, but not being necessarily recognized for.
Oh, that's interesting. So do you think they could tap into those industries as well as part of their pay?
Certainly.
They
could
definitely get their budget from there, right?
Yes. Very interesting. But, you know, then I want to ask, how is economic value determined? Because you say, you know, their input in our everyday lives is so great that it's almost, you know, impossible to actually determine the true value of all their input. But how is economic value determined then?
It's generally determined based on service in relation to time.
Mm-hmm.
That is just the most general basic definition.
Why do you think then, if it's service in relation to time, it's also, I mean, I guess, what makes a service valuable? How do we...
Yeah.
Well, it's something that's personal, because each one has their personal values. For me, hygiene is very important.
Mm.
And we spoke about the bathrooms and sanitation. Mm. For me, that's exceptionally important.
How then do we justify to ourselves paying so little for what is clearly such a valuable job. How do we get away with that as an economy?
Unfortunately, we're getting away, which is sad.
Mm.
And I think there's definitely need for us to take it to a higher platform where we say, you know what, forget about fees must fall, etc. We are saying hashtag salary increases to domestic workers and cleaners.
I love it. I love it. Mm. I think it could really catch on. I think it's a really powerful movement.
I think it could
movement.
Really catch on. And I think if every corporate just donates, be it 1% extra of their bottom line towards a domestic or a cleaner's salary, it will certainly make a huge difference in their lives.
But you know what? I think we still have to go back to value, because we see that a lot of different industries keep complaining and saying our value is a lot greater than the money we will ever receive, right?
Mm.
And then at most, maybe they'll give them a 5% increase if they choose to be kind or whatever. But the devaluation of their role in society and in that industry is still devalued. How do we change what value means?
It's the perception by society that these are people who are blue colored workers and people who are just manual laborers.
Mm.
So they just see it as something manual, and what else can you deliver?
They don't see the qualitative value.
They don't see the qualitative value to it, you know, and that.
Or they see it, but they don't attach it.
They don't attach it.
Right.
But also, we can go a step further. Yes, we are speaking right now about domestic workers and cleaners.
Mm.
The next level is your teachers, your policemen, etc. And your nurses.
Mm.
And these people as well, the very same situation. What is their economic value in relation to the income that they take home on a monthly basis?
Mm.
Then you have other countries, be it first world countries, etc., where your teachers and your nurses are highly paid and seem to be highly skilled people.
Absolutely.
There are countries where your security guards, your domestics, etc., earn more than admin workers.
Mm.
So what I'm trying to say is it's a uniquely South African situation.
Interesting. Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Because globally, you can do research, just get onto Google. You know, there are some countries that really, really value the services of your teachers, your nurses, your domestic workers, etc. They're seen in a very different light.
So how much of this has to do, I guess you're talking about our values as a society.
Our values as a society is one where we've attached the lowest value to certain professions.
Okay. And how much do skills have to do with this? Because I wonder, for instance, I can see there's so much for me about a domestic worker's job, though not currently treated professionally, that can definitely be developed that way. Right? And I suspect that a large part of it has to do with the fact that they don't go to school to do what they do. However, for me, they almost deserve honorary certificates, because every day they're teaching themselves on the job, you know, and they're catching all kinds of curveballs. And increasingly, when they become involved with a family, they do more and more for that family, right? But I wonder, is it because this work hasn't been certified? They haven't. We haven't developed a curriculum. We haven't developed programs to legitimize it as skilled work, even though it is so highly skilled, in my opinion.
So I think,
but it's self-taught.
A lot of it does speak to that, because there are a lot of agencies out there where you can get a domestic worker who's certified in first aid and who has a driver's license, etc. But you're not paying 200 rands per month for her.
Mm.
You're paying a much higher rate. So certainly,
per hour.
Per day.
Per day.
You know, and certainly skills and education and that certification has a huge role to pay
But then how why, for instance, would they pay a soccer player who did not study for their skill but is highly skilled? Why do they get paid high, but a domestic worker who is also not, you know, qualified but highly skilled?
Their training is quite formal, though. I find that athletes get paid higher the more formally they train.
Okay.
Yeah. But now I wonder, could we bump this role up a class?
Yeah.
If it was certified. If we just did certain aesthetic things.
So here's the thing. In terms of certification, their skill is more practical, right? There's no need for the academic, right? A slight academic is great. Some domestics and cleaners are literate. Others are not. But maybe to some people it matters, to others it doesn't. But certainly if there is a practical course that a person goes through and you've got your certificate that says, I'm a certified domestic worker, and based on that, you'll know your daily rate, etc., is an X amount. That will definitely help. And also it will give them the recognition and acknowledgement that no longer exists. Because right now, whether you're a domestic worker who's finished grade 10 or grade 12 or who has zero literacy, you are classed as the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a lot of it, ladies, has to do with society and the misperceptions of society.
So now tell me, what kind of services, what kind of roles do we value in our society, do you find? What are the trends that you notice?
The trends that I notice is the only roles that get valued in society, unfortunately, are those where there is some sort of technical or academic training. If you're a person who's got a degree, forget about a primary degree, if they see you've got an honors or a master's, automatically you find a person's attitude towards you changes.
Yes.
You know, and it all comes down to the society thing. And I can share various examples with you. When I generally meet people, I just introduce myself as Nikki. Nothing else about my academics, etc., etc. But throughout the conversation, certain things come out. I never, ever tell people about my academics, my experience, that type of thing. So people just see you as Nikki, you know. But the minute people hear from others, oh, but do you know she's a certified financial planner? Do you know she's done this? People's attitude towards me changes. And I ask, why? Just because I've got a piece of paper? You know, why? What makes me different from any other person?
So this is interesting to me because I, for the past year, have been au pairing because I've been on a writing sabbatical.
Oh, shame on you. Shame on you. How dare you?
Anyway, so this is what I've been doing for the past year or so to sustain myself while I write and I do more creative things. It's not dissimilar to the role of domestic worker at all. Actually, a lot of, you know, half of my job is probably done by the domestic worker in the home, right? And actually, a lot of people don't have au pairs and just rely on their domestic workers. But I'm not certified, okay? I've done some studying. I've done work that's unrelated to childcare. But just because I come in as myself, you know, I present myself the way that I speak the way I do, right? I speak the way I do and I come in the clothes that I do and I drive the car that I do. I am paid probably twice as much, if not more, than the domestic worker. I don't cook, I don't clean, I don't bath the children, right? Mostly I do homework and I drive.
Perception. Perceived value.
And I mean, it's so strange to me because increasingly you have domestic workers with driver's licenses, right? And so that means that there really is no difference between you and the au pair. But just because of that profiling, they themselves don't identify as au pairs. They identify as domestic workers. When essentially you could have two people doing the same exact work, right? And just the title is different because they don't value themselves enough to think of themselves as au pairs, and au pairs almost value themselves too much to think of themselves as domestic workers. It's very strange. And so it's two camps of people doing very similar work, and the difference is aesthetic.
There's a lot of agencies out there where you can contact them and actually hire a domestic via them. So why are those agencies more successful as opposed to the domestic marketing themselves by themselves? Because most of those agencies are owned by people who have marketing skill, skills as entrepreneurs, business owners, etc. And they are looking at it from a different perspective as opposed to the domestic worker. So if a domestic worker may profile themselves, they may not do it in an attractive manner as which the agency through which they are applying for the job does it, because the agency takes a cut of the daily rate that the helper gets, and it's in the agency's best interest to market the domestic as best as they can. Whereas the domestic, uncertain, you know, if Nikki's paying me 200 rands per day, if I don't take it, I may not get another job. And I need this 200 rands to help me for XYZ.
So I think not only are they undervalued in their role, but I find that the working class are undervalued in terms of their spend, their money. You know, if you had to almost some, it's so strange, but like two people can have the same amount of money and somehow one person's money is worth more.
Absolutely. Yes.
Bali, let me get started.
Oh, does that make sense? I thought I was mad.
It's like she's arrived.
I have arrived.
Okay, great. Touch
on a topic very close to my heart. So my company is called Opulentus Wealth Management. And if you go through the site, we talk about the definition of wealth management. There is a perception out there that if you have an X net asset value and earn an X amount of income, etc., and if you a certain look, etc., that you are perceived to be wealthy. That is the perception, emphasis on the word perception. So I've dealt with clients for many years. I didn't just start up in my first job and start dealing with high net worth clients. It came as I progressed in my career. And in my years of experience, I will illustrate two examples to you. So you've got client A who earns 4,000 rands per month. After all her expenses are paid, she's got disposable income of 2,000. Then you've got client B who earns 150,000 rands per month. After all her debit orders go off, etc., she's got no disposable income and her overdraft kicks in. Now I ask you this question, ladies. Between the two, who has more wealth? Wealth is linked to disposable income and not what these LSM people look at in terms of earnings.
So the first is earning earning 4,000 rand.
Correct.
A month is left with 2,000 rand disposable income.
Correct.
What is the second one earning?
150 per month.
150,000.
150,000 per month.
Okay.
Highly affluent. After all the debit orders go off, there's no disposable income. She kicks into overdraft.
So who actually is more wealthy?
There you go. And who would I choose as a client?
That's interesting.
How does someone get to that stage where they own so much? Okay, I'm assuming that maybe they're living beyond their means. Is that...
Talisa, you're speaking about South Africans. So let me tell you a few things I've picked up over the last few years. South Africans are either keeping up with the Kumalos or the Naidus. It's as simple as that. Or the Krugers. It just depends which race group you are. And people just try to keep up with each other, right? And maybe now's a good time to maybe speak about the black middle class and the sandwich generation, etc.
Please do, please do.
Because you find young graduates, you finish your B degree, you've moved into your honors. Because, I mean, face it, these days, even with a B degree, you're not even getting an entry role, right? You finish your honors, etc. Off you go into the working world. You get your first job, hopefully on a grad recruitment program, a learnership, etc. You're earning an income, which is something you've never had before. Yay! So how do we spend our first paycheck? And ladies, this is where it begins and it ends. Because what you do with your first paycheck will 99.9% dictate what you do with the rest of your paychecks until retirement.
Oh, wow.
But really, even if they see the first time that it doesn't work, this is a mess, they will continue.
They will continue, because if with your first check you say, yes, this is it, after struggling at varsity for 4 years, etc., I've got my first paycheck, so I've got a net of 20,000 rands per month. What is the first thing most people go and buy? Is it a house or an apartment? Absolutely not.
Not at all.
My first car.
Yes.
And what car is it? Something functional, a little Hyundai i10? No. Please, we want to move to something more upper class. Mm. You know, let's get a Ford Fiesta, etc. Hey, if we can afford a 1 Series, or perceive that we can afford a 1 Series BMW, etc. Mm. Hey, let's go and get it. Mm. Forget the fact that almost 50-60% of your salary is going towards the payment of the car, the maintenance, and the petrol or diesel, etc.
Mm.
People do that because they want to keep up with their peers,
This is interesting, this topic around what people are doing with their salaries, however much they earn. Because I think that a domestic worker's salary goes a really, really long way. First of all, because they don't have this pressure of keeping up with the Kumalos. Secondly, because these women are often the backbone of their families and their communities, right? And they're educating their kids to break a cycle of poverty. And so I want you to speak around the importance of in that demographic of women, the importance of a woman's salary in that demographic, if you can.
The importance of a woman's salary.
And in general, but yes.
Mm-hmm. And in general is so, so key, because a lot of these women are often single mothers. And a lot of these women, apart from taking care of their own kids, take care of extended family members. Whether it's the child of a sister who's now moved to the Eastern Cape, etc., or whether it's extended parents, etc. So their salaries have a huge impact in terms of our economy. They really contribute in a way which others may think is unnoticeable, but it's far from unnoticeable.
And our stability as a society, right?
And our stability as a society. You know, as I said earlier on with that example, these are the people who sit with greater disposable income than your white-collared workers.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
It's not only fascinating, but it is true. And I've experienced it. And also, apart from domestics, you know, I've seen it with other clients, like nurses, like teachers, police officers, etc. These are clients who will say to you, hey, listen, I've got 5,000. What investment can I look at? Whereas your white-collared worker, even for them to put away 1,000 rands is 1,000 too much.
It is so true. Sorry, I speak from experience. It is so true. And sometimes I wonder where the hell the money is going. I can't tell sometimes.
So it's actually very simple. They live within their means.
That's amazing.
Is it because they know fundamentally they do not earn a lot, so the pursuit of things beyond their means is not there?
Amazing at budgeting. Like, there is some of the most sophisticated budgeters I've ever met earn the least. And is that why?
So you're touching on another topic that's very, very close to my heart, which is budgeting.
Mm.
For a lot of educated people who are listening in, they're more than likely going to think, oh, please, budgeting. Everyone does budgeting. But there's two types of budgeting. There's budgeting in your head, where you have an idea of what you earn and what your expenses are. And then there's the real budgeting, where you put pen to paper and you write down how much you earn and how much you spend.
Mm.
Therein lies a huge difference, because the mind, ladies, tricks you. And the mind tricks you into believing that you've got more disposable income than what you actually do.
Mm.
Whereas when you put pen to paper, you actually see the reality.
It's a hard truth.
It's a hardcore truth. Yeah. And what I admire and appreciate about domestic workers is when they draw up their budgets, They will account for everything from taxi fare to the groceries to electricity to paying for school, for kids' creche fees, school fees, etc. By the cent, they budget everything.
So do you think that domestic workers could actually help the households that they work for use their money better?
Could they be empowered to do that? That's something we're very excited by, yes. The thought of.
I would absolutely love to be involved in a test pilot project where we could actually test that.
Could we?
I would absolutely love to. You know, let's do it.
Because we recently had a conversation. We're trying to launch what are we calling it? A segment of our overall show? Let's call it a
we can't figure out what to call it. Episode.
A monthly
season.
Segment.
I don't know.
And our show called More Money, More Problems, right? And it's often assumed
I
that.
I love it.
I think it's fitting.
It's very fitting.
Often assumed that money makes things easier. But we, you know, some of the most stressed people I know have a lot of money. And it just seems to get worse. And so what we want is domestic workers to come in from an advisory point of view, to comment on Household South Africa and where they can be saving money and spending it better. Because they observe so much of our waste.
Mbali, I don't think you actually understand what you've actually touched on and how huge it is. So let's take a household, right?
I guess, yeah.
And where you have a domestic. I'll use myself as an example. So I live by myself. I've got my domestic. She's been with me for the last 5 years. And she often tells me, if we happen to see each other, you know, as she's coming in or leaving and I'm there, and she actually tells me, Nikki, you've bought too much of surf, and in future, I will tell you when we need surf. Mm. She will look at my cupboard and she will say to me, you should not be buying canned foods, because for the last few months, I've been throwing them out because they expire.
Wow.
Right? This is my domestic, right?
That's amazing.
And then she will say to me, are you aware that you had purchased bedding which you have not used? Aware that you have got 3 or 4 sets of bedding that has not been opened or used? Don't you think that you should be purchasing new curtains, because it's time to change the curtains?
That is incredible.
With my domestic went on maternity leave for 3 months. It was 3 of the most stressful months for me, because I can truly say that I rely on her to run the household. She's very precious to me. She's been with me for a number of years, and yes, we have our ups and downs, etc.
Sure.
But she manages the household.
And it's not her practical contribution, right? It's not just her hands, but it's her insights.
It's her insights. I mean, to say to me, and then obviously you look at the prices of the bedding and whatever, you know, one was like 500 rands, the other was 1,000. And then I thought, okay, within these 4 sets of bedding, there's about 2,500 sitting here. Oh, so yes, I'm a certified financial planner. Clearly, I could have used it for something else. Wow.
But do you think as a society we're humble enough to accept the counsel?
So I certainly am, but that's the person that I am. And I think we pass this age where we've got to look at things like ego, age, race, title, that type
of
thing.
It's holding us back. It's very
impressive. Some of the greatest life lessons I've actually learned from cleaners at work. I've learned from security guards, etc.
Yes, we continue to.
Yeah. Okay, so these women in your mind could be expert advisors on household budgeting.
I think if you had to give 2,000 rands to your domestic and just give her a basic list of what you need, right? And say to her, here's the car, go to a Pick and Pay, Woolies, Spar, whatever, and bring back these items.
She'll save you.
She will bring you money back.
Yes.
If you had to go there, you will use that 2,000 and an extra 1,000 rand.
Yes. You know, you'll probably end up leaving things at the till if that's all you have.
There you go.
But you know what, Nikki?
Can you see the power in it?
Yes. Amazing. But Nikki, what also worries me about the fact that there's such good budgeters and very good at spending money wisely is, won't employers think that that's actually all they need then? They need that little. And so won't they think that, you know, why must I increase their pay if they're so good at managing very little?
So I think here we need government to assist us as well.
That needs to be regulated,
you know, because
for sure.
It needs to be regulated. Mm. It needs to be regulated. They need to speak out. And also we as well, we need to support this. I'd also like to offer a very different take on this. Mm. So when my domestic was on maternity leave, I was using friends, family, whomever, just to get their domestics in, just to assist. Now, by all means, am I not saying that I'm lazy, etc. You know, I am a working girl after all. But anyway, so I really missed her. I missed her contribution. I missed the fact that she just comes in and she knows exactly what to do. Literally 1 year ago, I moved houses. And my domestic was a person who packed up everything. And when we moved to the new place, she unpacked everything. Mm. You know, I was just there. Seriously. I was just there. She did everything. For the first 2 weeks, I'd have to call her every time and say to her, okay, where are the towels? Where did you put this? She literally packed up one home and unpacked the other. That is how much I value her, and I show her how I value her in different ways. Mm. Be it the bonuses that I pay her, be it the things that I buy her. She's got a little child right now, just gave birth 2 or 3 months ago. Okay. The things that I give to her. But that's just the person I am. To me, she is worth her weight in gold, literally. Mm. Because for me to now start the process to go to an agency, interview a few different helpers,
build trust,
have a person come in, take them through the house, let them know exactly how I like my shirts ironed, let them know exactly when to clean the cupboards and just to do things that I like. For me, it's that time. And right now, I do not have that time. So I'm saying I will pay for time. I do not mind.
That's all people want to pay
for time.
Yeah, it's true. To get time back.
For me to now, okay, so just to put clothes in the wash and get it out and dry it and now take it to have it ironed, etc. It takes a lot of time. And that comes to the earlier part of our discussion in terms of what is the value.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge element of time.
Yeah.
And I am willing to pay to get back time because it allows me to do different things in my life or get to the things that I don't have time to do. Imagine on a Saturday if you've got to get up and now you've got to clean the house, wash the dishes, etc., etc. Saturday is my errand day.
Yeah.
You know, that is when whatever I need to do during the week, I can't get to it. I do it on a Saturday. But now, if I don't have a domestic and I need to get up and do it, yes, I can do it, you know, but it's that opportunity cost. Absolutely. It's that time.
Absolutely. But, you know, there remains a difference in appreciation between valuing her as a person and valuing her as a functional tool, you know, and often when one is not valued as the human that she is, so maybe a mother and a wife and those sort of things, but rather as the person gives you time, you know, that also reflects on the pay. So do you think enough people respect domestic workers as the people that they are, or are they often valued as functional things more than people?
They don't. Unfortunately, in South Africa, majority of the households see a domestic as a functional worker.
But I think that's our, I think that's kind of our work mentality in general here. You know, I find that in the most sophisticated of corporate spaces, you are just a number. And in a institution, a university institution, you are a student number. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's just, this is, we're just becoming increasingly distant from one another. Technology is not helping. Now you barely ever have to deal with a human, ever. And so in many ways, we've just become mechanized.
I guess soon we'd have robo-maids, hey?
Oh, my goodness. But yeah, okay. Now, speaking about about their natural kind of built-in budgeting skills and their natural intuition, I want to ask you a question about African financial practice, because I think it's very, very unique. And maybe you see that culturally, mm-hmm. there must be differences with your clients, right, that are just built in to their culture.
Yes, there are cultural differences.
What do you have some unique characteristics of African financial practice?
There's two. One's exceptionally positive and one is exceptionally negative. Okay. Should I go with the good or the bad?
Start with the good news.
No, the bad.
The good news. So
The bad news.
One of the very negative financial practices that I see amongst the Black culture in our country is the concept of microlenders. I believe they're called Mashonisas,
yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
And
is that because it's a myth? I mean, you know, from my sheltered
emphasis on the word sheltered.
Sheltered upper middle class.
Emphasis on the word sheltered.
Like yes, from your sheltered background, Em.
I mean, so, I watch these things on TV, you know, on like SABC One, Sophie, and so like. I know about it in theory, but I wondered if it's a myth or if it's like a reality.
So it is a reality. You have lived a sheltered life. Why is it a reality?
Well, if it... never mind. Actually, well, I was going to say something
how
else.
How does it work? Can you just quickly break
okay,
it down?
Okay, very briefly from my limited knowledge. So why do I say it is a reality? When we often engage with clients, we ask them for their payslips. Because you'd often ask clients, oh, what do you earn? You know, as I said, what's in the mind and what's on paper differs.
Yeah.
No, I earn 30,000 per month. Then you look at the salary slip, actually far from 30,000, you know. So a lot of micro lenders put stop orders through the person's salary. So
really?
the day if you're getting paid on the first of each month, the stop order will first go off to pay your loan obligation, right. And then the balance
so these are,
is your salary.
Are these formal micro institutions?
Micro institutions. Okay. Yeah.
All right, I thought you were talking about...
So it is still regulated by the National Credit Regulator, right?
Mm. And, but what is the risk with these things? What so is the danger?
The danger with this is clients never come out of debt, because the minute a loan is paid, then they give you more credit. And let's face it, ladies, there are always life emergencies.
Yeah.
Yeah, never not, eh?
Yeah. You know, so there will always be a need for you to go back to the micro lender to increase that 2,000. And this is an emphasis on the word micro, to increase that amount of 2,500 to 3,000 rands for just an extra 500. Hey, the interest rates are regulated by the National Credit Regulator and the National Credit Act, etc. But these are very high rates of interest.
Are they higher than bigger institutions?
Most cases, yes.
So what is the risk that comes with going to a microlender as opposed to a bank?
So maybe not the risk. The advantage of going to a microlender is chances of a client getting granted credit is far higher as opposed to the bank.
But doesn't that mean that sometimes they don't have a choice?
So that's the reason why these micro lenders continue to become stronger and stronger because clients do not have a choice. Obviously, from a bank perspective, you don't want to take on potential bad debt.
And but they won't let you either.
And they won't let you either, you know. But then of recent, I see some of the banks even offer ATM loans. So I'm not a great fan of that, you know.
Yeah.
And it's such a catch-22 situation, because on one end, I come from a perspective where we want to create awareness to get clients to embrace financial freedom.
Yeah.
So get rid of as much debt as possible. And then on the other hand, you have it, be it your banks, your micro lenders, etc., who are forever offering credit and in some situations making it very easy for people to obtain credit.
Right. So is this because in our country, Black people... sort of as a whole earn the least, and therefore they're more vulnerable to credit or susceptible to taking on too much credit? Or is this a cultural thing where I find a lot of the time Western financial practices maybe not compatible with African culture? You know, maybe we're just not credit smart. Is it that?
So there's a lot of things that we can discuss here, mm-hmm. right? So the first thing is, it's no longer a cultural thing. Let me tell you, whether a client's black, white, colored, Indian, etc., everyone out there has loans.
Mm-hmm.
Be it microloans, loans at banks, etc., it's just the amounts, etc., that differs and the institution from which they have it, right? Mm-hmm. And this speaks to a greater problem in our country, which is the problem of the lack of financial literacy, education, and the lack of savings, mm-hmm. right? So that's one particular aspect. So something very important is, if you look at the black middle class, or if you look at domestics, etc. So let's look at domestics, right? Mm. Their parents were more than likely also domestics, right? And that is how they got into the role. Your mom's now reaching retirement stage. You 20, 21, etc. You take over her role. And so it continues, right? So here's the question. So for the young lady now who's 22, who's taken on the role as domestic, what has her mother taught her, you know?
Yeah.
Has her mother taught her to budget? Has her mother taught her that if you run out of money before you earn your salary, go to the micro lender. They will help you bridge that gap. So everything comes down to what we taught at home, right? And if at home our teachings of financial and the financial literacy we get at home is very basic, or if it's more steered towards spending as opposed to saving, guess what, ladies? We grow up as adults and follow the same pattern until we become aware of it and we choose to break that pattern.
Sure. The good news.
Yeah, let's end the show off with good news.
There's something about the black culture that has really, really fascinated me, and it really touches my heart in a very big way. There is the concept of stock fouts.
I was going to say to you that was going to be my last question. You was going to be, what is the power of the stock fout?
Okay, I beat you to it. So, you know, sometimes you read research from large companies and they say South Africans don't have a savings culture, and they bring it down to particular LSMs, almost alluding that it's more your sort of black clients, etc., you know. But here's the thing, ladies, I wonder, where do they get this research from? You know, I would love someone to show me how they got this research, because most black clients, especially your cleaners, your gardeners, your domestic workers, etc., these people belong to some sort of stock fell or the other. And you know what? They don't belong to one stock fell. They generally belong to two or three different stock fells.
Wow.
I have heard.
I really want to get in on that. But anyway, I feel so deprived.
I have heard stories where stock fells have successfully contributed towards the festive period, you know, and the Christmas lunches and dinners and New Year's Eve parties, etc. And thereafter, funding school kids' uniforms, books, school fees, etc. in Jan. You know, I've heard of stories where
Jan, when we're all poor.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've heard of stories where stock fouls have funded Lobola with damages, you know.
Wow.
Stock fouls have funded bricks, cement, timber, etc. To build houses.
But I just want to know how they regulate this, because everyone is putting money in. How do they decide where it goes?
So you and me both, if I could really get that right, it would be worth more than any academic degree to me. It's interesting because I've spoken to different clients.
Doesn't it work? Isn't it like, what is it called? It's like almost like crowd. Yes, that's the word. Isn't it like almost like crowd investing or crowd saving?
Correct.
Where everybody pays a certain amount.
Mm.
There's 10 of us. We each pay a certain amount. Say it's 100 rand. every month. Mm. Okay. And then the 1,000 rand. So 100 times 10 is a 1,000. And then the 1,000 rand goes to one person.
Oh, really?
Each year. And then it alternates.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's how it works.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating is the mechanics behind it.
Mm.
How they know who to pay. How they collect everything.
Exactly.
How they build
that
in
is the skill.
Annual inflationary increases is absolutely mind-blowing.
Mm. Oh, wow.
But they do it with such great ease. Mm. And they do it with such great honesty. Mm. And that, for me, is one of the most amazing practices that I have found.
It's probably the most powerful thing I think about African communities, that they're so well networked.
It's so interesting because we talk so much about how Black people don't want to help other Black people out. You know, we're not to speak.
No, but I mean, this is a middle class disease that you're referring to.
No, ladies, you know, I beg to differ. On a daily basis, I see the culture of Ubuntu come through various people.
Yeah.
You know, I
see it.
Is
it still alive?
It is still alive and kicking, or maybe I choose to actually see it.
I think you choose to see it. I think it definitely is still, it still exists. I think it dwindles as you move up the socioeconomic ladder, though.
But isn't it also because people are demanding so much of you?
Yeah, exactly. No, look, there are probably a million reasons. But I find that on the ground, at grassroots, it's at its strongest in those communities.
Mm. It is very strong at grassroots level.
Amazing discussion.
So, yeah, you know, all for Stockfels, it's absolutely amazing. You know, sometimes, so when I see a client and I think, wow, there's so much. And that's why I say, you know, you learn from all types of people. And some of the greatest life lessons I've learned hasn't come from people who are senior managers or people who are professionals, etc. It's from people who are domestics, people who are blue-collared workers, for want of a better word. But it's also, I guess, a personal thing, because I choose to open myself up to learnings.
And that's why we chose to have you here, and we are so grateful for your time and for your counsel. You really, this has been such an insightful discussion. You're so evolved as a human being and as a thinker. You know?
Have you ever had that compliment before?
Evolved.
I've never had that compliment.
No,
thank you. I gracefully accept it. If I may, just one last thing.
Mm.
And something for the listeners to think about. Yes, you know, we post 1994, and still there's a lot of talk about the Black middle class and race and inequality, etc. Being in the role that I am, money knows no color.
Mm.
Money has no color.
Mm. Thank you, Nikki.
Thank you so much. And thank you to you guys for listening, as always. Thank you to my co-host, Lisa Cindy. We will catch you later on the main sessions of Cliff Central.
Please make sure to follow our Twitter page on @MaidProject, MAIDE Project. And also make sure to follow our Facebook page, which is simply The Maid Sessions, MAIDE as well. Have a lovely evening.
Cliff Central.
The revolution. I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.